Okay, so
Yeah.
basically, Robert, I contacted you because it's such massive news, obviously. And your interview, which I listened to over the weekend, I listened to it twice, Robert, this New Yorker interview you did. And it just felt to me that it was the single thing that I'd listened to that I felt explained what was happening with sufficient gravitas and urgency and clarity. And I kind of wanted everybody to hear it. And
Okay.
I particularly wanted people in Britain to hear it this week because we are obviously in the midst of this crisis. And my perception is just that people haven't really taken in the gravity of the crisis as yet. And I felt it was the thing which really came across to me, which was this whole thing of like actually having the historical perspective is what we need at the moment to make the sense of what's happening. So I just wondered if you could sort of take it away from there. What is your kind of message for Britain and for Europe in terms of what we are facing this week and what we need to do?
Well, it's a major crisis for Europe because I don't know how much Europeans have come to understand that it's over. I feel like people have been treating this like a bumpy marriage, and if only we do a little counseling and I make a compromise here and do that, then they can make it all work out. But people really don't understand that the world we've known is gone and is not coming back anytime soon because, for one thing, Trump is a phenomenon. The people who support Trump are not going away, even when Trump goes away. And the message that I'm giving people in the United States is stop counting on the elections to save us, because I don't think Trump is going to allow a free and fair election in 2026, much less 2028. So for Europeans, they need to stop waiting for the America that they know to come back, because it isn't. And so I think it's just vitally important that Europe now, to the best of its ability, come together and really undertake would be a dramatic strategic revolution. Europe needs to become self-sufficient in both military and economic terms. It needs to start understanding that it is faced by aggressive powers on both flanks. They face an aggressive Russia in the east, and they face an aggressive America run by a megalomaniac in the West. And so it's not about anymore the alliance. It's about Europe coming together, building the capability. This is not marginal. It's not like going from 2% to 2.5%. This is a real revolution. Europe has done this in the past. They've had to. And I just hope they can do it now. And speaking directly to the UK, if I may, it's extremely unfortunate the UK took itself out of Europe, because this is a moment when I think the UK historically would have a leadership role in this, but I'm not sure the UK has it in it anymore to really resist the United States. So it's going to be quite a challenge.
Robert, can you just explain your background and like how you've reached this analysis? Because you wrote this amazing piece back in 2016 before Trump had even won the nomination. You set it out very clearly how you thought that if Trump came to power, that would be the way that America embraced fascism. And this came from your sort of long-standing track record as a historian. Can you just explain that and why you saw that so clearly with Trump?
Well, Trump himself is a sort of unique phenomenon. He really is a megalomaniac in a way that we haven't seen even with our most powerful presidents. I mean, for him, it's all about domination. You know, people think that he's transactional. The only transaction he's interested in is one where he dominates you and you accept that he's dominating you. And we can see that in his tariff policy. So Trump is, to some extent, a remarkable character in But the forces that he has put himself in front of in the United States, and quite deliberately, when he ran first for office in 2011, his sole issue was the birther controversy about whether Barack Obama, our first black president, was actually an American. And in so doing, he signaled to a very old and very potent movement of basically white Christian supremacists. These were the people who ran the South in the 19th century and throughout much of right up until the Civil Rights Movement. They've been bitter ever since. There's a, you know, they used to talk about in the 50s, they talked about status anxiety, but we're basically talking about people who feel like they are the true Americans, and all these immigrants and brown people and people of other religions have come in, and now they have too many rights, and they basically want to restore the America that existed circa 1920, in the 20s, at the height of the second Ku Klux Klan. And the people who are running all this, the Stephen Millers and Russell Vaughts, they are true believers in what they call post-liberalism, but is really anti-liberalism. They're not just opposed to, like, the left. They're opposed to the founders, the American founders' liberal government. And some of them are quite frank. The ideologists of this movement are quite frank in saying that they want to change that government that the founders created. And that's what's happening. And the vehicle is this power-hungry Donald Trump.
So the thing which I found so, you know, the thing that I've heard you say, Robert, which is different from what I hear other people say, much of the language around this is still being couched in this threat to democracy. Like, if we don't do X, then there is this threat. We may not have whatever. And what you're saying so clearly is it's already happened. Yeah. Like, with this, like, they are already inside the house. And the militarization that we're seeing in Minneapolis, this is the kind of end times. So, is that correct?
Yes. Yes, and I think people are not seeing clearly, although goodness knows, I feel like the administration has done everything except climb up on the roof of the White House and yell what they're going to do. I mean, Trump is already talking about how you don't really need these midterm elections. But more importantly, the model that they have now displayed to us in Minnesota is the model. They have deliberately sent ICE in a way to spark protests because of their behavior. They're deliberately provoking people into protesting so that they can then declare a national emergency and invoke the insurrection act so they can get the U.S. military directly involved in putting down protesters. And calling everybody who protests a domestic terrorist is the legal justification for that. Now imagine this on a national scale. Who's to say that during an election they don't flood some heavily Democratic area with ICE people, which provokes inevitably the protests and potentially even violence, which then justifies sending in the military under the Insurrection Act and seizing the ballot boxes, which is what Trump wanted to do in 2020. He's made no secret of his thoughts, at least. And I think we're now seeing the beginning of the implementation. And the other thing about Minneapolis is it's designed to desensitize everybody, get us used to the fact that this kind of thing is going to happen. And so I think we're at a very critical juncture, and people are not quite waking up to it in time, in my view.
And yeah, because that's the critical thing, because it doesn't feel to me like that has landed in America, that people are alarmed, they're scared, but it's still this sort of impossibility of processing something that is so massive. Is that your perception as well?
Yes. Now, the really bad news is I think that at least 40% of Americans are completely down with it. I think that they are willing to have a dictatorship if the people who are being oppressed are the right people. And I also think that the leaders of the Republicans in Congress, John Thune and Mike Johnson, they're perfectly willing to live in a dictatorship if it means holding their jobs, and they're certainly not going to risk their jobs to prevent the dictatorship. So it's not just Trump and then everybody not getting it. There are people who are down with it. Then there's a lot of people who are either unaware or indifferent, or they don't really see it, etc. So you're really talking about a minority of Americans who even can see clearly what's happening, and I don't know what it would take to change that and have a much broader part of the American public understand it. We're still in the case where if there were four Republican senators willing to stand up to this, I think they could still stop it. But since there's no prospect apparently of finding four Republican senators, I just don't know where it's, I don't know who is supposed to stop it. The courts are not going to stop it, put it that way.
So the messaging today from Keir Starmer is, it's like, it's still this, we're in a special relationship with the United States. They're fundamental to our security. We've got to talk it out. it's like, you know, it's still this, we're not going to get into a trade war. We want to, and just using, you know, it's not right what he's done. It feels to me like it's sort of, I think with your, you know, messaging ringing in my ears, it seems to be spectacularly underplaying what is happening here and what is required of us in this moment. And, you know, in the British press, it was like this whole, oh, the British government played a blinder because it put on this state visit and Trump loved the banquet. And so, you know what I mean? It's all, we managed to pull it out of the bag. What's your sort of take upon that? And what should we be interpreting of what's happening in this moment?
Well, again, this it's just been a faulty analysis to think that if you can flatter Trump enough and call him daddy, that that means that he'll leave you alone. As we see, he's not leaving anybody alone. It's really just, in fact, with him, it's an invitation to come back and demand something else and push you around. So you can't buy anything in that way. Now, the reason that these nations of Europe and Britain are doing this is because the alternative is ghastly. I mean, the alternative is you have to understand that America is no longer an ally. You have to understand that there is no special relationship. You know, I talk in this larger piece that I wrote for The Atlantic, which is about the end of the world order and how America set us up against the rest of the world, is that, you know, Europe risks becoming a collection of fiefdoms of the great empires of the world right now. They can, you know, some of them will be under Russia's thumb, some of them will be under America's thumb, maybe some of them will be influenced more by China. But I'm a little worried that Britain is already in that category. That I don't know that Britain has it at this point to remove itself from its American, you know, from being essentially an American protectorate. And you know, I have such admiration for the British people, and there's been so many times in history when Britain itself has saved the world, not the United States, but I don't see signs of that Britain at this particular moment.
So, Robert, one of the things which most alarms me, because it's my kind of like, you know, special area of interest, is these the British government has undertaken these massive deals with these US tech companies. This came out of that state visit. It includes, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, Britain signed a £240 million deal to put Palantir in the middle of our armed forces, our Ministry of Defence. It just seems like total madness to have a Trump ally, like, literally in our defence infrastructure. What's your take on that?
That you're right, that it's madness. But look, I mean, a lot of what Trump is able to do has been greased by the powerful tech companies and the billionaires in the U.S. who are, you know, only interested in making money. And, you know, this is, Americans are not the only ones who suffer from that problem. But this notion that you, again, the notion that you can buy the Americans off by, you know, making these kinds of deals is just wrong. And honestly, Palantir now is a very pernicious force in the United States. It's the, you know, it's the big keeper of the surveillance technology that ICE is using in America, and I shudder to think about using it in Britain too. But again, the European countries and the UK are going to have to realize that they now are out of the world that they think they've been in, and that they think is still existing. That world is gone, and it's time to understand that it's going to be every country for himself now. Or Europe can show the kind of unity that it has occasionally shown in the past and rise to the occasion. I wish I were more optimistic.
Robert, can I just ask you, I know you've got to go, just like this one last question, which is the other thing which it frustrates me incredibly, is it's been from 2016, actually before then, Nigel Farage and his far-right parties, there's been a succession of them in the UK, have very clearly aligned themselves with Trump. They've also been very pro-Russian, and they're still treated in this sort of like cozy British way. Have you got any advice for us in that we're just a couple of years ahead behind you in some respects now? You had Biden, you know, you had this, and now you've had Trump come back. What is your, in terms of like understanding these far right parties, who are aligned with the Trump agenda. What is the thing that you can tell us about how we should be looking at this and what we should be doing?
Well, I'm not going to advise you on how to deal with your own politics, but I will just say all of us, I think, have not understood, which I feel like is the most basic thing, is that liberalism, which is to say freedom and the protection of individual rights, is at death's door right now. I don't know where, if America is not going to support individual rights and freedoms anymore and is itself going to become a dictatorship, I don't know where liberalism will survive. The only place that I can see it surviving is in the UK and Europe, but people have to understand what the stakes are. It is like the 1930s again, even though there's no Hitler, in the sense that I really do believe liberalism is a fleeting moment in world history. I mean, that's, if you, as a historian, I can say we've been living through a unique period since 1945, and there is no guarantee that it lasts. And I just think people have been very slow to understand what the real stakes are. And the real stakes are freedom.
Robert, that's totally terrifying. It's totally terrifying. It's sort of like, but also it feels, for me, it feels, I find it actually comforting to have somebody of your authority and credibility saying this stuff, because I feel I'm just not hearing it in the mainstream media enough.
Anyway, well, thank you. And I hope, you know, I'm hopeful that that people will begin to see it more clearly. And as the pieces fall into part, a lot of it is, once you have gotten yourself into the mode of understanding what's happening, then everything that occurs fits a pattern. Whereas if you're sort of still living in a previous world, when all these events happen, people are just puzzled, or they're like putting it in a, what's the motive here, et cetera. The motive is domination. And in Trump's case, it's domination in the United States and also global domination. I think the world is waking up to that now. And unfortunately, it's going to be very bad for the United States as well as for everybody else.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Robert. Thank you so much for doing this. And I'll send you the results and we'll keep it up and everything. And,
great.
You're a superstar. Thank you. Keep on.
Thank you.
Keep on telling us. We need
it. Okay. You too. Okay. All right.
Cheerio. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.